Hello guys, it's Amber here and welcome back to This May Get Hairy. Just wanted to say guys, I'm smothering a bit with hay fever, so if I sound very bunged up, that is why, so I apologise in advance. I've got a great episode for you today. We chat to the wonderful Nia The Light. Nia is one of the most influential women within the hair space. If you Google hair influencer, Nia's name pops up, so I was absolutely chuffed to get her. I've been following her journey for a while, but to be able to have this chat was just incredible. We talk about a lot of things in this episode. We talk about Nia's hair journey, her natural hair journey, and how at such a young age, I think she's in her early 20s, how she built an amazing business. And it was just really insightful to learn and explore just how important hair is within the Black community. I found this conversation inspiring, but also so educational. Everyone, enjoy Nia The Light. Hi Nia, how are you?
How are you?
I'm good. I'm so looking forward to chatting to you. And you know, black hair and textured hair has always been something that I've been so interested in. So I'm just so excited to chat to you about your personal hair journey and your evolution and everything that you've kind of been through with that. So I'm hoping you could take us back to baby Nia and just tell me about the soil you were rooted in and tell me about your family life and, you know, the earliest memory you have with your hair.
So yeah, I was born in London and my mom is Zimbabwean and my dad's English. I would say my earliest memory of my hair was probably when I had the nits and my mom had to cut my hair off, and I just had to have it cut really short because my hair was really long and my mom was relaxing it. But when I had nits, you know, it was really bad and my mom didn't know what to do. So she just cut it. That's one that came to mind. And then another one would probably be just in school, just feeling different and standing out in the school pictures and having regular hair salon appointments to get my hair braided, spending a lot of time in like the Jamaican hair salons where they would be having like grown women talk, but I would just be there in my own little world. Yeah, with my little magazines. And yeah, I have so many. I feel like my hair's really played a part in my whole journey.
And I listened to this, one of your YouTube clips, when you were speaking about your hair and you were talking about your mother and you were saying that she has different hair to you. So that must have been quite interesting.
I think looking back, I was the first mixed race grandchild and my granddad has got so many grandkids. So I feel like I was the tester, like the guinea pig, I guess, because now my uncles and aunties have married on and they have mixed race babies as well, but they all know what to do now because of my mom and, you know, my mom's experience. So I feel like no one knew what to do. My mom didn't have that community to say, what should we do with her hair? So she tried her best and, you know, she did what she knew at the time. But I feel like looking at her hair journey, she was always trying different things. She would sometimes dye her hair silver. She would have short hair. Then she would have a wig. Then she would get braids. She was always expressing herself through her hair as well. So I think as I've gotten older, even though now I don't do anything with my hair, I just have it big. But if I was to look at my life in hindsight, I've changed it so much and it's been different according to where I am in life. So I guess it's similar.
You spoke about when you were around, I think it was around 3, you said, correct me if I'm wrong, where you kind of had your first experience about going to get your hair straightened. Can you kind of talk me through what that's like? What were the feelings around that? If you can remember, you may have been a little bit older. Perhaps I got my facts wrong.
I know I was had my hair relaxed from 3, but I didn't go anywhere. My mom used to do it from home and she was really good. So she would she would do it every 6 months. I don't remember the exact time, but she would have a special cushion and I'd sit on it on the floor and she would sit on the sofa and then just apply it on my roots. And then as soon as I would tell her that my roots were tingling, I would run to the bath and she would rinse it out and then she would just straighten it or just put it into like a cute little hairstyle. But I didn't go anywhere to get my hair straightened until I was about 10. I used to go to the same Jamaican lady. Her name was Rita. And she used to silk press my hair with the tongs. And I used to walk out feeling like the most beautiful girl in the world. And everyone would love it in school because my hair looked like theirs. And, you know, they weren't used to seeing you like that. So
and I guess to kind of fit in a way when we're teenagers or young girls, right, all we want to do is just look the same as everyone else. And I love that when you speak about your mom, that she got the cushion out and you kind of spent that time together when she was doing your hair. And sometimes I'd imagine that may have been in silence, or perhaps that was your time to kind of connect and be together. And that's what I love about that mother-daughter relationship. It's the grooming, you know, they're literally kind of sitting there grooming you, checking you. And it's such a beautiful tradition to have. I remember when I was losing my hair, every single time I washed it, I'd sit down, my mom would sit me down and she would comb my hair. And every single time she'd comb it, so much hair would come out, and she kind of wouldn't tell me about how severe it was. She'd kind of keep that a secret by kind of just hiding the balls in different places so I didn't realize. So I truly understand how special that must have been, just having that time with your mom when she was just there looking after you and giving you all the love in the world through hair, I guess.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think hair is something that connects women, especially now I have a salon. I have so many clients that come to see me. Sometimes some come once a week for a steam and some come like once every 3 months for a cut. And every time we see each other, it's like I'm friends with their hair, or I connect with them through their hair. And it's really nice to see. So I feel like hair is such a deep thing for women, but obviously for Black women, for so long, we weren't allowed to wear our hair the way it is. So it's just a way for us to feel free within ourselves.
Totally. And I guess when the women, when they come to you, I'm sure they feel so safe and so held, because you've kind of created a safe space for them, especially for curly hair. And, you know, our hairstylists can become our therapist in a way. Sometimes we'll tell things to our hairstylist that we wouldn't tell our husband or our wife. You know, it's such an amazing honor to be able to do that. And I really believe that people who create salons or who work within the hair space, they're all just insanely empathic people who really care about women and men, of course, but they're really there to kind of give that service. And it's just a wonderful thing. I remember you spoke about another YouTube clip that I watched. You kind of spoke at the kind of around the age of 11, you'd been kind of straightening it up to that point, and then you kind of decided that you wanted to stop straightening it. Can you kind of talk us through that kind of shift that you had and why that was and what that experience was like?
Yeah, so I was in year 7, and if you're not from the UK, it's the first year of high school. And there was a girl with curly hair and we were the same complexion, and I didn't understand why she had curly hair and I didn't. So she was in the year above me. And at that time, anyone who was obviously older than you, you looked up to them like a big sister. She told me to go home and wash my hair. And she said, of course it goes curly, like just wash it. And so I went home and my mum walked in on me like washing my hair like 3 times. And my mum was like, what are you doing? And I was like, this girl, she said that if I wash my hair, that my curls are going to come back. And my mum was like, oh, like they're not going to come back. You're going to have to cut your hair. So I ended up doing a big chop and my curls didn't come back right away, because obviously your hair can sometimes be in such a shock that it doesn't start to show its curls until a few months in, especially because I didn't do a pixie. I just did like half. So it was kind of like transitioning. And, you know, I had to now embrace short hair.
How did you feel? Because I can just imagine me at that age doing anything kind of drastic or different. Again, that was kind of out of the status quo. I'd feel so scared. How did you feel as a young girl doing that and making that big leap?
I feel like my decisions are always very impulsive and I'm still like that to this day. So sometimes I do things and then I feel it up like months after. At the time, it didn't feel scary because it was summer holidays, so I could hibernate at home. The only thing that was scary was she gave me bleach blonde highlights and it was because it was just bleach. There was no toner, no, and it was literally, my hair's so dark. So it was just like black on yellow stripes.
Did you ask for that, or that was like a creative choice?
I asked for caramel, a caramel color, and she did her own thing. I never saw Rita again. That was our life relationship finished. I didn't feel like any kind of way because I was hidden away from school, and school is where you receive everything. And especially at that age. So yeah, even now when I big chopped my hair 6 years ago, I went away to Morocco the next day with my friends and I didn't post online for like 3 weeks. I wore headscarves at uni, and I made it my own special thing first before I shared it with anyone else. And I've always been like that. When I signed the leases for my salon, I didn't tell anyone for months. When I bought my house, I didn't tell anyone. Like I just love to soak up my achievements, my things for me before I share it with anyone else.
I totally understand that. And you said this wonderful line when I was watching a clip of yours. You said cutting off your hair was a way to cut a girl who was trying to fit in. And I just thought that was so gorgeous. How did people receive you after you started to embrace that curly hair?
When I went back to school, I was now in year 8, because I did it in the summer of year 7. I guess people don't care in year 8. Like, especially boys who you think you care so much about as a girl. But yeah, people didn't really care. And I guess because at that time I was actually still straightening it to make it look longer. So I wasn't actually on my natural hair journey. I just cut it. And then I was like, I'm going to straighten it just because it looks longer. So yeah, I don't really remember people's comments, and they obviously weren't bad if I don't remember them. So yeah, I think only when I cut my hair in year 10, I cut it again and it was like a rounded afro. That's when I received the most comments, because it was so different to what everyone looked like at the time.
And when that was happening, was there a certain person or thing that inspired you to do it, or it was kind of within yourself that you kind of thought, this is definitely the kind of path I want to go down?
So between year 8 and year 10, I was still straightening my hair. I would do space buns and I'll do all the hairstyles. And then when I was in year 10, my hair was curly at the root, but straight in some pieces. And I wanted to get my hair cut. So again, it was summer holiday of year 10. I'm about to start year 11. And I went to this hairdresser's a few, you know, minutes from me. And it was a Jamaican lady again. And I felt at home in her salon. She was wearing like a scarf as a skirt and she had her hair wrapped. And I was like, this is an auntie. Like, I know she won't let me down. And yeah, and she ended up tying my hair up in a high ponytail and just cutting all the hair that came out. But I had just asked her for a small trim.
Oh, Jesus.
And she cut everything. And it was, God, a cute shape. Like, it ended up being this really cute 1960s afro.
Yeah.
But I hated
her. Not what you wanted. Not what
in
you
that
wanted.
Moment.
Of
I
course.
Was, and as well, I was only 15, so I had no confidence to say anything. When she asked if I was happy, I said yeah, and then walked out crying.
Of course. Why do we all do that? I guess when we're young, we do it, right? But I have women to this day who go into a hair salon and they get butchered and they don't say anything, and then they leave. Like, it's their fault a lot of the time as well. It's such a vulnerable state to be in, isn't it?
Yeah. But I also think it's like when I'm in a nail shop, when I feel bad for saying things, like if I'm like, no, it's too pointy, or I don't want that, like all the clients start looking at you, the nail, they start then speaking about you, and you know they're speaking about you. So you just get scared and you just leave with nails that you don't like, but you're just too scared. So I feel like it's the same feeling. Sometimes we avoid sticking up for ourselves because we fear confrontation. When I went back to school, obviously it was this huge style that was so different, and at the time it was Rihanna Red, Cassie Shaved Side, that was the style. We Found Love era, yeah, it was that.
That's
time.
Back now, that's all back
exactly
now.
But yeah, it was that kind of era, so I didn't look like the trends. So every time I'd go into town, everyone would be like, Fro Girl. They would just say Afro Girl. And that's where my social media name, my first one, started, from all these, you know, people from other schools. They'll just call me Afro Girl. And I loved it. It actually made me connect with myself. And I remember when I'd go out, older women would be like, oh, you look like my friend from the 60s. And then I became obsessed with the Black Panthers, and I started writing about them in all of my English assignments. I started dressing very Afrocentric because I was then seeing like Solange Knowles and just people from, you know, the 60s, the 80s, just seeing them rock their fro in magazines, online. I became obsessed.
Yeah.
And
I mean, there's
so
much to get obsessed with, these iconic, yeah, amazing women that are just so inspiring in every way.
Exactly. And I just felt so empowered. I felt like I'd finally found myself. But obviously, when you look back, you realize that you're always creating different versions of yourselves. But at that time, I just felt so me and I just loved it. And I still feel that energy within me today. I think that was the start of my natural hair journey.
And you spoke about, you know, you then also kind of became obsessed with YouTube, where you kind of found a community of women who were also going on their natural hair journey, and you were getting tips and tricks and just kind of reaching out to those women to be able to look after your hair as much as possible. Because from what I've learned, you know, with textured hair, love and attention needs to go into it, and there's different ways to look after it. And that's all the you need to just gather as much information as you possibly can.
Yeah, I started watching this woman on YouTube called Taran Guy, and she was the first curly hair influencer to pull up on YouTube and show us how to twist our hair, how to detangle it. And I became obsessed with her. She was my Beyonce. She was everything to me. And I started watching her videos, and then I started posting pictures on Instagram, and people would ask me how to do my hair. So I got my iPhone 4, I think, at the time, and my Windows Movie Maker, and I made my first ever tutorial. And when I went to school the next day, everyone was playing it in the common room, and I was so embarrassed, because it was at that time doing a YouTube channel was not what it is today. It was actually quite embarrassing. Like, people would be like, what are you doing? Like, whereas now it's like really cool. So yeah, I started following her, and then I, you know, wanted to emulate her and be the UK version in a way.
Well, you've definitely achieved that and tenfold. You kind of, that's amazing that you saw someone that you loved and then you literally put your mind to something and look what you've created. It's insane. It's so, yeah. So cool.
I remember when I met her and I cried because I was so like, oh my God, this is my idol, my inspiration.
Where did you meet her?
So there used to be loads of curly hair events when the natural hair era first began, and we always used to go, and they would fly people out from America, and you'd, you know, get to meet them. And I went with my mom, and when I met her, I made a video for her, and I gave it to her on a USB, and then I cried. And everyone remembers that because there were so many natural hair bloggers at that venue. So they, every time I've seen them after, they're like, do you remember when you cried? And I'm like, yeah, I was only 15 at the time.
Maybe you'd still cry again today, I guess, when you meet your idols like that. I had a similar experience when I cried afterwards, and I didn't actually cry in front of her, thankfully. But there's a wonderful woman called Gail Porter who also has alopecia. And when I was kind of going through it, she was the person that I looked up to because she was the only other person I knew who was hair free as well. And we literally last week made her first wig. She never had a wig before. And having that full circle moment after she left, I just sat there and I was like, sobbed, because I was like, I can't believe that I was given the opportunity to be able to be on level with her as a friend, and also to hopefully give her something that she's proud of and that she'll wear and that will really have a benefit to her life, do you know? So they say don't meet your idols, but sometimes it's nice, isn't it? So then that kind of started your world of content creation. I'd imagine you started and then it just kind of evolved to what it is today. And, you know, it is incredible watching everything just from the content you put on Instagram to your YouTube videos. And like I said at the beginning, they're obviously so stunning to look at because you're such a beautiful woman. But again, they are just so educational and inspiring as well. One thing I wanted to ask you, seeing as your hair has a lot to do with your sense of self, I'd imagine, and in elements of your career is based around it, I suppose. Do you have any fear of that though, or anxiety around always having to have fantastic, great hair? Do you feel that pressure on your shoulders at all?
Not anymore. I used to, and that's why on my last big chop 6 years ago, I cut it, because I used to wear my hair like it was a uniform or a costume. And I realized that when I was on a tour around Africa doing events for natural hair, and I would wake up at like 5 a.m. but all the other girls would wake up at 9 because I wanted to spend that time doing my hair, making sure it was perfect. And when one of the girls, you know, told me to just tie it back and told me to rest and, you know, let go, that's when I realized, okay, I'm addicted to being this person, this version of me all the time. Now when I'm at the salon, or even like today, I was running errands, I had my hair in a messy bun, and like 7 years ago, me would never, but now I'm not defined by my hair. And also I don't feel the need to always pull up looking a certain way. My beauty and my value exists way beyond my aesthetics. So I just don't I don't feel the pressure anymore, but I would say when I travel, I feel the pressure, because when I travel, I love to create, and creating and my aesthetics align and coincide very closely. So when I travel and I want to do these videos twirling around markets, or, you know, being on the beach, I definitely want my hair to be big and fluffy and free. So that's the only time I feel pressure. But on my recent trip to Kenya, I went in the pool a million times and the ocean, and came out and didn't put anything and just let my hair be free. And I loved it. And I loved not seeing my hair defined and just big. And I unlocked a new level of freedom. So slowly I'm detaching from that when I travel. But when I'm in the UK, I do not care. I don't care at all.
And tell me about, I know it was a few years back, but you started Happy Afro Day. Tell me a little bit about that. It sounded incredible when I was reading about it.
So that was around the time of the Big Chop and when I met Taran Guy. So I just started doing events literally for women to just connect, for us to take pictures, for us to just have fun. But it started off as a media project. When my obsession with Black Panther started and Afros and Africa, every single assignment I was asked to do in English and media and film, because those are the three subjects I studied in A-levels, I made it about Afros. So if I had the same teacher, they would be tired of me. In English, I was writing about the beauty of Afros and I'd research where it came from. And then in media, I would make Afro magazines. And then in film, I wanted to make a film about natural hair. So I did a call out on Instagram and I asked women to meet in Hyde Park, and it was for my media assignment. And I asked them to come so I could film a video, and the magazine was called Froday. So I asked everyone to shout Happy Froday, and it went viral. The pictures went viral, and everything that was with me, everything that I do has always just happened very seamlessly and very naturally. Obviously, I've had to work incredibly hard, but even my knowledge of curly hair and having a salon, it happened so naturally. So
you're kind of seriously going with the flow is what they say when things are kind of working.
Go with the
flow. Oh, I love it.
Yeah. So I used to just, well, I still do, but now when you get older, you think about the risks more and the consequences of your actions. But when I was younger, I would just go for it. And I realized from the imagery that I wanted to do more events. And that's when I started traveling around the world, doing more. And yeah, so shout out to my film teacher, Mr. Fennick, because if he didn't give us that assignment to make a film about something we're passionate about, then I wouldn't have had the opportunity to do those events.
It's incredible. Where did you travel to?
So after the London one, my mum booked me a flight to go to New York. I went by myself and I filmed the next video in Central Park, and about 50 people came, and again, the images went viral.
What was the feeling when all those ladies just rocked up? We can so easily like not think about how big of a deal that is sometimes. Like, you got 50 amazing women to come because they believed in your mission and they wanted to be there. It's incredible. It must have felt so cool.
Looking back, I'm like, what the hell was I doing? Because I have brothers, and one of them is actually 20, but when he was around 18, he got drunk for the first time and he went out with his friends. And when my stepmom was telling me, I was like, but he's still a baby. And I realized that when I was 18, I was doing the most. So looking back, I'm like, wow, I was so young, but I was so certain of what I wanted. And I didn't know where any of this stuff would take me, but I just loved it. I loved everything natural hair. I loved bringing women together. I still do. The message has always been the same, but it just transpires in different ways. And right now it's a more intimate level, obviously doing hair, but before it was events with so many people. The events got bigger. I went to more places. So I wouldn't have that one-to-one time, but Yeah, the message has always been there.
And day to day, do you actually work on the hair yourself? How do you split up your time being a business owner, content creator, hair obsessive extraordinaire?
I actually do the hair, but I don't share it online. I'm going to this year. The reason why I haven't shared it is because I wanted the curl bar to be its own entity. I felt like by me sharing it, it would be near the light salon, which it is, but I wanted it to stand on its own. I didn't want people to come just because it was my salon. I wanted them to come because they heard the curl bar was really good. So I didn't want to be the forefront of the brand. Although I'd like to say I'm confident. I'm also very shy. So I don't like to boast or post a lot about my clients because it just feels like a sacred time between me and them. But now everyone's bullying me too online. Not bullying me, but everyone's like, okay, we're bored of the hair tutorials and now I want to see what you do on clients, because I'm actually really good. And every time I say that to my colleagues, they're always like, yeah, you are good. Like, why are you saying it like that? But it's because I just don't really share my craft. But once I do, I know I'll own it more because then other people are aware of my craft, if that makes sense. But as for how I split my time, so yeah, I work at the salon full time. And then I have like 2 to 3 days off, depending on whether it's a 4-day week at the salon or a 5-day week. And we alternate so that everyone can have a healthy work-life balance. And then, yeah, on the other days I'm off, my brother shoots my content for me on Sundays because he's off from school. He's 16 and he is amazing at filming. He's so amazing that when we film the work, I never say, let me see. And I literally would just be like, okay, we're filming for this brand. I just need shots of this. He films it. I drop him home. I edit it the next day. I have no oohs and ahs of, oh my God, we didn't get the shot that I needed, or, oh, it was blurry, or, oh, it wasn't in focus, blah, blah, blah. He literally gets it all. And then I have to have one day where I do nothing, which is typically Monday or half of the Sunday. And in that time, my do nothing means cleaning the house or just sitting down. I have to have some time at home because I pour into so many women. I pour into like 8 women a day, clients. And then I have staff. I have 6 employees and I think I have 7. I always forget the count. And then my employees have clients. So obviously I interact with them. I create the content for the salon. I do a lot. So that's why I need that one day or half a day to just do nothing, because I've burnt out 3 times and I don't like who I've met when I've burnt out. So I really try to avoid her as much as possible.
Yeah, it's a serious issue. And I remember when the curl bar opened and I didn't know it was necessarily linked to you. So well done. I didn't know that I would tick the box on that. But I remember I was working with a gorgeous lady who was married to a black man and they had beautiful babies with hair that was obviously very different to her. And she was really, really struggling at the time to kind of get to grips with how to look after the hair as best she possibly could. And I remember sending her your Instagram or the curl bar Instagram. It was in around the same time that it opened. And she was like, thank you so much. This is exactly what I wanted. And I know she went in and had the most amazing experience. And like I said in the intro, it is truly so amazing that you have, what I'm taking from it, you've created something that you wish you had when you grew up. In a way, it's people who specialize in this, they know all about it. And even, you know, my husband and his sister, they have curly, curly hair. And even from just being with them and knowing about them, I know a little bit more about just general curly hair and how it can't be brushed after or it gets frizzy and they need curl creams and this and that. And they're also so delighted that you exist as well. So I'm saying to them, you need to go in there. It's so amazing. It's run by this incredible, just young, vivacious woman. And the fact that you have 2 now, when and how did you decide to kind of make this amazing, inclusive space that's specifically designed for women with textured curly hair?
The more questions you ask me, the more I realize how layered life is, because I feel like we go to the present and then I have to take you back and then we come back to the present. But so around the time that I was in year 11, when I had big chopped my hair from the lady that tied it up, around that time, that was my chance to have a true fresh start. So I was now learning how to look after this new texture because it was the first time I was really spending time with it and not straightening it. And my friends started transitioning from obviously the Rihanna Red, the relaxers, and they wanted advice. So everyone started coming to me in the area and asking for curl tips and curl advice, and I started giving it to them. Then one girl, she wanted help on learning how to style her hair. So she came to my house and I taught her how to style her hair. And then I saw little curls that were out of place and I asked her if I could cut them. And I ended up doing like a what we call now a curl by curl cut. And I created the shape for her and she was so happy. She started telling her friends who told her friends. And that's how it started. And then like years went on, I was doing hair, I was getting more experience and more knowledge. And one of my clients, she loved having her hair done by me. And then I stopped because I then went to uni. And when I finished uni, so this is now, I'm now 20, I think I was, 21 at the time. She came to my house. She messaged me saying she hasn't been to anyone since me, which was like 4 years before that. And she was like, please, can I come over for a cut? And so she came over and she was like, why don't you do this? Like, you're so good. Like, I can't find anyone. And that day we then went online and I found this shop and we just looked at it. And then the next, I sent an inquiry. Then the next day, I went to a brand event. I think it was Fern Cotton. She'd released a book and I went there and it was all about manifesting. And I got back in my car and I was driving and I was like, they haven't called me. So then I picked up my phone. And as I picked up my phone, they called me and they were like, hi, we've received your inquiry. Do you want to come and look at the shop? And he was like, we're closing in half an hour. And where I was 31 minutes away from them. So I was like, I'll be there in 30 minutes. I'm racing legally. And I get there and I walked in and I said to the man, his name's Richard, and he's been the best. He won't listen to this because he's deep in lettings, but he's like my business dad. He doesn't know that he is, but I walked in and I was like, Richard, this is going to be mine. I was like, this is going to be pink. I'm going to have a pink wall here. This is going to be for curly hair. And he was like, I'm going to need you to do a pitch to the landlord because she's got other people waiting and today's the last day for the viewings. And weird enough, a week before that, I had to do a consulting event with this magazine company, like a Refinery 29 kind of thing. So I had this PDF that I'd made for them, which, you know, spoke about who I am, what I do. They wanted to make their magazine more inclusive for curly hair. So I had this pitch ready to go. All I had to do was get some images from Pinterest of what I would plan to do to the space, because he mentioned that and why Middle Lane needs a curly hair salon. I literally just had to add two pages, sent it off, got the offer the next on Monday, because it was Friday, got the offer on Monday, called my dad. I was like, Dad, I'm gonna open a salon, should I do it? And he was like, yeah. He was like, you never know. And if my dad says the sky is pink, the sky is pink. I do anything my dad says. Like, he is my bestie. So I was like, okay. And then I did it. I had no clue what running a business meant.
And did you get like funding to like make the space what it was? How do you go about that then, if you with cash and things like that, like putting money into it?
So I had actually saved all the money that I had made from doing clients 5 years before. I didn't touch the money. I'd saved it, and because I knew I was going to open a salon, but I thought I'd open it later on in life. And because my dad gave me the green light, the next day I then needed to find a solicitor because the estate agent asked for that. So I went and found one. I went into Central London, gave them my passport. They gave me a really cheap rate because they just had a new intern. And looking back, those rates were really cheap. I then needed someone to help me do the interiors, and my cousin offered to help. She found a building company that we then went to the salon 2 days after to look at the space.
And what year was this in? Yeah,
this was 2019.
God, just before COVID. I mean, that is so incredible and so quick. And I guess you probably weren't scared because you were probably just going for it and just taking each thing as it came. It was the same with me. When I was not the exact same, I think I put more considered thought. And well, I don't know about that. I think mine was a little bit spur of the moment like yourself, but it's such an exhilarating feeling, but also such a terrifying feeling at the same breath. But I'm sure you were just elated that it was finally happening.
Yeah, it was a journey.
And now you have two, and you've like how many employees? Nearly 10 employees. It's just incredible. I think what you've done is just so impressive. You must be so proud. Do you have those moments where you kind of take a step back and look at what you've done?
Yeah, I do quite frequently. I would probably say I get them when I have clients who are high profile, who will tell me like, oh, we heard about you from, we were on set and one of the hairstylists was saying we have to come here, because I realized this is bigger than me. That I exist in other rooms I don't know, I exist in other spaces I don't know. And when people travel from far, like when clients are like, I came from Belgium for the day and I've just got a backpack with them, or when magazines like Vogue feature the salon, this, those moments that I'm like, wow, like this is insane. And probably when in my office, I just have loads of like pictures and memories, and I'm a memory hoarder. So I have photo albums. I still get my pictures developed and from a film camera. And it's probably when I sit down and go through them and I realize the journey I've been on. But my goal, funny enough, is to not define myself by my career. That's my goal this year. So even though I have achieved a lot, I want to live life without the intention of having my career at the forefront. I want to discover who I am outside of that. And that's my current goal right now. Yeah.
It's a great goal to have. And it's an ever expanding one. So you'll just find amazing parts of yourself through it. And I mentioned at the beginning about some amazing hair documentaries that I watched. Have you seen, it's on Disney Plus, called The Hair Tales. Have you watched that?
I haven't actually. I started watching it and then I was also watching Line of Duty.
Oh, the same thing. Perhaps a bit more gripping.
and I was like, let me watch Line of Duty. So I got into that because during Christmas, the salon was closed. So I was trying to catch up on everything. But I never watch crime stuff. I always watch like romance or anything black is me. So this is the first time I was into this whole crime world and I was engrossed. So I didn't watch anything besides Line of Duty, but it's on my list.
You should definitely watch it. It's the amazing Tracy Ellis Ross, who's the kind of host of it. And she speaks to everyone. You know, Oprah speaks about her hair journey and this other amazing black women who are telling their stories about hair. And it was so interesting to watch with the whole idea of, you know, black hair being celebrated on one hand, but then, you know, stigmatized in the other hand as well. And, you know, I still do modeling. And when I rock up on set and a black girl also rocks up on set, another amazing, beautiful model, and there's still such poor education around black hair. And it's so sad to see. And I hear it's shifting and changing a bit, but on those jobs, it's so horrible for those girls who really want their hair to be dressed so they look the best way possible, but the people can't do it. And another thing that I would never even think of, you know, when you go to a hotel, for example, and they have the little mini shampoo and conditioners, not for black hair, not for textured hair. And also, you know, the whole hair care industry, how it's so underfunded for black women's hair, and it's just not in the mainstream. And it's just some of these core things, it's so important for us to speak about them, to kind of shift that and change that. And that's what, it's so sick what you're doing, because you really are having a part to play in the whole revolution and evolution of black hair, for sure.
I think the day that a natural hair brand partners with a hotel will be a crazy day in history, because every time I pull up to a hotel, it's always these, first of all, why is the shampoo and body wash in one bottle? That scares me. That scares my skin. Like, that is scary. That, I mean, I never look at them, but when I do see that, I'm always like, how is that meant to work? But yeah, the day that happens, that natural hair brand will be smiling all the way to the bank. They will be laughing.
Would you do a natural hair brand?
I would love to. But I'm already, as you can tell, I'm already spread thin. I always think about it. I've one big goal left, and I've had this goal since I was six, and it's to open an orphanage in Zimbabwe / school, like a whole campus basically, where kids can come and stay there, but then they go to school there. That's my goal, but that's a huge goal. And then I'd love to have a hairline, because obviously I've been to school for hair. I have lived and breathed hair. I've done marketing for hair. I've done it all. There's no aspect of hair I have not existed in. And I would love to have a skincare line for body acne. So yeah, those are the three things that I have left in my career goals. So yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Have you ever worn a wig yourself? You know, I'm obviously obsessed with wigs. That's my world. Have you ever explored that kind of side of hair ever?
So my mum obviously used to have wigs, and she used to have little doll's heads where people usually keep them when they have like a wig closet. I've seen like videos of that. So she used to have a few, and I'll just put them on, but not seriously. I would love to though, because I want to straighten my hair, but I'm scared to. So yeah, that would be fun.
Well, if you ever want to try some wigs, you're more than welcome to come to our little shop in London Fields. We'd be happy to pop a few wigs on you to kind of explore different elements of yourself.
I'll just have to slick my hair back. Otherwise, wig is not going anywhere.
We'll slick that back. We're used to it for sure. And you know, there's this statement, hair as your crown. You know, we say that a lot. Is that a statement that's true to you?
Definitely. I feel like when I wear my hair freely, I'm just being myself, because it grows out of me and it's uniquely my own. So when I wear it, I definitely feel like I'm wearing my crown for sure.
And last question, if you had advice to someone, or can you give advice to someone who is kind of just starting their natural hair journey, is there anything that you'd like to tell them? Some words of wisdom you wish you heard when you were kind of going through it when you were younger?
Probably that it gets better, but the most important one is to do things at your own pace. I have clients that come in and they want to do a big chop and they're set on it and we cut everything and, you know, they feel empowered. Sometimes they cry. And I always say to them at the beginning of the appointment, whatever you want this to be, let me know. If you want to cry, we can make it that. If you want to physically express what you're letting go of, we can do that. If you want me to not make it about a big chop and we focus on other things, we can do that. So I always tailor the service to them, but there's also some clients who just want to trim a little bit and transition and go slowly at their own pace. So I would say whatever stage you're at, listen to how you feel. Don't feel like you have to follow this certain journey just because others have done it. If you're ready to let go, let go. If you're not, that's okay. But just know that the journey of natural hair is never ending. You're always learning what to use, what not to use. You're always learning your hair, how you want to wear it. And, you know, it's uniquely your own. So don't feel the pressure to follow the rules, because there are none.
Well, thank you so, so much for taking the time. I truly appreciate you. And I do think it's so cool what you've done, and it's so inspiring what you've done. And keep doing it. Go for all those career goals, and most importantly, the goal within yourself to be undefined by what we do. I think that's such a beautiful thing and a great message to put out there to the world. So thank you so much, and hopefully see you in person one day. I'll see
you
later.
Thank you.
Bye, Nia. Bye.
Thank you guys so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed that. And if you like what you're listening to, then please do make sure to follow or subscribe. And also, if you just want to touch base and say hello, then please do email us thismaygethairy@gmail.com. Until the next one, guys. Bye.